Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, everybody. My name is Neil White, and from Backpage, this is The Big Interview with Graham Hunter. To be precise, it's our monthly Q&A show when our beloved socios at patreon.com/GrahamHunter and our beloved sponsors, Bet365, send in questions, and that Graham Hunter over there in Barcelona, he answers them. Graham, we're going to start like Mastermind this time. You're going to have a specialized subject. It's FC Barcelona. And if you don't know the answers to any of these, you can, of course, say, take the ball, pass the ball. So, to begin with, it's a regular contributor, Ian Arnott, who says, Hola, jefe. As Ernesto Valverde's contract at Camp Nou expires at the end of the current season, is there any strength in the rumour Barcelona would pursue the services of Mauricio Pochettino? And I want to expand this question slightly by bringing in our first from our sponsors, Bet365, who want to know which club should be first on the phone to Poch. So let's start with Valverde and Barca and then move on to the other numbers on Pochettino's list of missed calls this week.
Good morning, Ian. Hola, jefe. The first answer is really clear. I don't know where the rumour comes from, but there's absolutely no chance of Pochettino and Barca for a number of reasons. First of all, he has said that he's antipathetic towards Barcelona, that he couldn't work there, that he wouldn't want to work there. I think it's because he didn't come to this continent from South America hating Barca, but having coached and played for Espanyol, I think that while Valverde also coached Espanyol to a European final at Hampden against Sevilla, it shouldn't be an automatic bar of any kind. His words about Football Club Barcelona, Neil and Ian, have been so pungent that it made it pretty clear that he was not only, because for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction, not only was he distancing himself from ever managing Barcelona, he was marking down the territory that one day he'd actively like to be Real Madrid manager. And as such, that's a really smart phrase to use. I'll never coach Barca. It's funny though, it really, in all honesty, Pochettino stands for certain concepts, promotes a brand of football, which would be very welcome, not only at the Camp Nou, but given the current squad resources. I think he'd be an immensely interesting choice to take over from Valverde. But given how tumultuous the Camp Nou is already in many, many aspects, adding somebody that the fans might boo out into the dugout every week would not be a good idea. As far as who should be on the telephone, I see very few other clubs that shouldn't have a shot at him. I'd very much like to see Pochettino take the break from intense daily football training that I think he probably needs, given that everybody, you don't need to have an inside view to know that there was a degree of burnout involved in what's happened at Spurs, upwards in terms of his relationship with Daniel Levy, but most importantly, around him, the football players that he moulded, in every case, helped to improve and brought them to the experience of their lifetimes by getting that late point at Camp Nou to go through the group, and then, you know, the really dramatic progress towards the Champions League final in Madrid, including that, 3-0 down, 3-3 against Ajax to knock them out of the Champions League semi-final. That relationship was eroded, and I think that Pochettino needs to take partial responsibility for that, and therefore a break, a recharging of the batteries is something that complements the elite football manager's preference always to begin a project having a pretty good inkling of it, say March, April, but then not taking over until the end of May, beginning of June. You have the summer, you have the training camp, you have time to get to know the players. And therefore, I hope he stops. And I would have said that there is a really clear message coming out of Manchester United that they want to maintain and give time to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I would back that. It would be hypocritical of me not to say that, because if you listen and you watch closely, you learn that it's not a cliche, it's a truism that football coaches need much more time than they're given at the moment, particularly one where, although Solskjaer is not wholly inexperienced, he is definitely learning on the job. They opted for him, and I think that it's to the club's health and the squad's health that Solskjaer is given time. Whether he proves to be the right manager or not, I think is still in the balance. I'm open-minded, but that means that with further evidence, it might be clear that Manchester United should be phoning Pochettino. Right now, the other principal candidate, not only, but principal candidate, I think is very patently Real Madrid, because they tried to get him and because he wants to coach there. There was a wedding in the summer that Pochettino signed his most recent contract with Spurs. He was at a society wedding in Madrid. He was sitting at the same table as Florentino Perez and José Ancho Sanchez, the president and vice president of Madrid. And they were like, if you'd had a buyout clause in your contract, we'd have come and signed you. You would be our coach. It wouldn't be Lopetegui. And that's how close he already came. So the counter side to that, guys, is that I see Zidane doing really quality work again at Real Madrid. Personally, I'm hugely enjoying the turnaround, the intensity, the quality of play. I won't list everything that I see about it because this isn't a Madrid answer, but I see Pochettino's need for Real Madrid as slightly greater at the moment than Madrid's need for him. There are other options, clearly, in that he is of the level to coach Juventus if Sarri doesn't work, PSG if Tuchel doesn't work, and improve both those clubs and add to his Champions League luster, Pochettino's luster. And the one I'll close off with now is that I know that there are huge swathes of opinion that think he's going to Bayern Munich, and I'm not saying that's impossible, but I can share with you, socios, and if I have mentioned it before, then pardon me, but Hasan Salihamidžić is the director of football at Bayern Munich. I know for a fact that for many, many months before Kovac was appointed, Bayern Munich studied every action of Pochettino, his words in public, his games at home and away, what was published in his book. They followed him really closely with an eye to appointing him. And they had an opinion, which I share, which is one of the Pochettino's pending tasks, is to be able to make elite quality impact substitutions in games where he's recognised the pattern of the match, where he's recognised opportunities to introduce particular players quicker than the opposition coach. And they think that he's too conservative. They think that one of his pending tasks is to get more accurate and more appropriate, i.e. quicker, about those match changes. Now, that might be one thing on a list of ticks and crosses that they can overcome, that they can say, we think he'll blossom in that aspect with us. But if Bayern Munich are held by many people, given Flick being a temporary appointment, given the fact that Bayern Munich have a very, very tumultuous domestic season, then those who think that Pochettino is going to Bayern Munich should come to terms with the idea that they have one serious black mark on their assessment of his current abilities.
Okay, we're going to move on to another doubler here. And part of this is, you know, it's pretty big news, I think, for our monthly Q&A shows, Graham. And that is that we have confirmed pronunciation on the name of one of our regular contributing socios. Are you ready for this?
For socios who don't know can't tell the time of day that this is a very, very early morning piece of work when each of us is working flat out for 8 or 9 days. And that very big piece of news. I do love your introduction. Yes, go on. Yes.
This is important. So this is straight from the man himself. And our first question is from Ethan Sokolas.
Ethan, I think we've had a right good shot at that over the months. Mr. Sokolas from Barcelona, buenos dias.
Ethan says, hi Graham, can you explain to me, and don't jump in here because we've got another socio who is on the same theme. Hi Graham, can you explain to me what's going on at Barca? It seems to be a bit of a mess. Ricky Puig wanting to leave, Griezmann not fitting in, amongst other things. Ian Boddy then says, Graham, what's going on at Barca? Is it A, Piqué, we started like this under Luis Enrique and went on to win the treble? Or B, Piqué, there are issues to be resolved, but inside the dressing room? Or C, the players aren't running as much as their rivals? Or is it something else? So it seems a bit weird to be talking about intrinsic problems at a team who are at the top of La Liga. But I think to anybody who's been watching them regularly, they are striking off keynotes.
No, listen, Ian Nathan, hello. I don't think it's that odd, because I think it's the task that we set ourselves. Whether we achieve it is down for the socios to judge. But I in no way do I think it's strange to look at Barcelona, top of the league, and as we record with the Dortmund game coming on Wednesday night, top of the Champions League group. If you look at the Champions League performance, I don't think there's any group leader with a worse goal difference. Barca have scored 4 goals compared to whatever it was, 11 at this stage last season. They've had 2 0-0 draws, which used to be as rare as hen's teeth. 2-0 draws in the group stage. When they've lost in La Liga, it's been pitiful. They're winning in an attritional way, where they're often getting bumped about and grabbing winners. But beyond the results and beyond the, you know, the contrasting worth of their play compared to their positions, both Ian and Nathan are right. There are some serious issues to resolve at Football Club Barcelona. And I was working recently with Chapi Ferrer of Dream Team fame. And it's interesting how you can become a player of Cruyff in a particular era, but completely, consciously or subconsciously, I don't know, disavow his values. Because I always try to apply the sort of judgment template that Cruyff or Guardiola would, to this club at least, because that's the brand of football thinking that they're identified with, which gave birth to this current era. And neither Guardiola nor Cruyff would judge on results. They would look at quality of performance, the idea behind a performance. They would look at, for example, seeing as you three introduced it, they would look at the well-being of a guy like Ricky Puig. And I'm going back to what Ian said about the APK, we started like this under Luis Enrique. Nope, forget that. BPK, there are issues to be resolved, but in the dressing room, yeah, I think that's right. And C, the players cover less kilometres than their rivals. Yes, I think that's right. But I think first and foremost, I go back to the way Neil expressed it at the end. Irrespective of the fact that you cannot judge a Barcelona squad and manager and brand of football simply by their positions, it remains true they've won 8 out of the last 11 leagues. It remains true that they have consistently earned huge sums of money by making it to the quarterfinal or semi-final of the Champions League. And there are many, many other clubs that, if you look back at Barcelona's recent record in the Champions League, while it would sting any club to go out so calamitously in a second leg against Roma, or to have to overturn deficits like they had to against Paris Saint-Germain, or be pumped by Juventus, the list goes on and on. The Liverpool thing being the apex of this, the high point of this, what the hell are we doing wrong that everybody else in Europe is doing right? The overall record of Barcelona, in terms of prestige, in terms of the European ranking, which is they're ranked number 2 in Europe behind Real Madrid because of their overall performance in the last 10 years. These things would be enough for most clubs. And I think that if we put a proper critical analysis together of the things that Ian and Nathan are asking about, but forget to say they've been, it's early in the morning and I didn't know that I was going to be asked to do something statistical, but did they win 4 Spanish Cups in a row? They certainly played dramatically well in beating Athletic Bilbao and beating Sevilla plus Alaves. I think there's another one in there. I think that does make it 4 Spanish Cups in a row. And if you lump in their Champions League performances generally, plus their title winning, then it does take an honest, acidic eye to point out they've spent money ludicrously badly. They've overpaid for players who seem to be, in my opinion, under-scouted. The question about whether Coutinho was needed was one that I think was fair to put forward. And it reminded me of the time when Barcelona lost Luis Figo to Real Madrid and there was general panic at Camp Nou. And they went, right, okay, what we'll do is we'll pay the De Boers, we'll pay Puyol, we'll pay Koku, we'll pay Luis Enrique. On top of their huge wages, we'll start paying them match appearance fees of about anywhere between 13,000 and 40,000 euros per game on top of a multi-million pound salary already to try and tie them to the club. We'll do anything to prevent Real Madrid coming back for Puyol, which was their intention, or Koku. And what we saw was a chaotic approach to keeping the squad hungry, a chaotic approach to how to sign well. And that was that led to what was, a 6-year trophy drought. And I make that comparison because Coutinho was brought because of the panic post-Neymar, the way in which Neymar was plucked away from them, the way in which they under-scouted Coutinho's personality. The other examples would be the massive cost for Dembélé, who should have been bought a year before, blooded in at the Camp Nou if they wanted. He should have been bought. They should have beaten Dortmund to the 15 million euro investment they gave to Rennes. And right now, Dembélé, several years into his time at Football Club Barcelona, is still failing to hold down a first team place, failing to control the ball, failing to shield the ball was the principal reason they went 1-0 down at Leganés. He's still extraordinary to watch. He would be, you know, when he's doing the things he does brilliantly, for my eye, he'd be as exciting to watch as Neymar is. It's just that it's far, far, far less regularly he does that. And therefore, things wrong, things to sort out. Well, retrospectively, you can't go back and take all that money back and buy better players. They've made an arse of it. And that's at a time when people talk about Messi dependence. They're utterly, utterly domestically reliant on Luis Suarez, not just his goals, but his brilliant positional play, is being one of the few remaining players who absolutely knows how to get the best out of Leo Messi, his competitiveness, and although I put it, you know, only in the list, not the list, his goal scoring, and that at a time when his athleticism is declining. He's about, I think, to turn 33. Busquets is a deeply, significantly declining force. They've elongated his contract massively. They're out of money, yet they must elongate Ter Stegen's contract. The general financial and football husbandry, which is a phrase I use often, but I think its meaning is perfect for this description, has been inadequate. And the club has been dragged along by the competitive will to win of Piqué and Alba and Busquets and Ter Stegen and the genius in their own way of Messi and Suarez. And the club owes the players, you know, they're on a record wage bill at the moment, but the club owes the players far more than they can give back to them in simple salaries. So the ills that need corrected are multiple, Ian, Ethan. The difference being that with two or three correct purchases, with the influx of energy and intensity that a new manager will bring next summer, and eventually with a new president in summer 2021, there are correctable flaws. It's just that right now, poor old Valverde is left with quite a mess. Perhaps the things that he's very good at as a coach and a manager are now slightly lower down the list of things that Football Club Barcelona needs. And that's what's going to be most testing in his final year as coach, which I believe this will be. I don't think he'll be renewed, because right now he definitely needs, beyond the fact he's been willing to deduce Ansu Fati and Carlos Perez and Wagwe and Araujo in times of need, he's also completely unwilling to think about taking Collado or Ricky Puig up one. The club seems to be completely dissonant in terms of its assessment of Ricky Puig compared to those fans who either read the papers or watch Ricky Puig regularly. For those socios who don't know him, he's a willowy but tremendously gifted dribbler, passer, People make Iniesta comparisons. I think that's invidious. I think that should be avoided. But he is somebody who twists away from a marker, twists away from a reception of a pass, maybe beats a man or two and lays beautiful passes into the path of others, can score, does score, creates chances. An extraordinarily exciting player. But it goes beyond Valverde and the microscope on Valverde, because Abidal has said it might be time for Ricky Puig to go out and go on loan. So this club, Ian Athaniel, is not wholly recognisable to the club that you'd have thought Ricky Puig would have been coming through the ranks into. And sadly, that's to his detriment.
Okay, finally on Barcelona, before we take a little break, this one is from Julian Ball Rodriguez, and he asks, do you think Barca will dip into the transfer market in January? And if so, who should they sign? So I guess this is the poor husbandry that you're talking about. If we remain within that model, like a likely outcome, as opposed to, you know, a complete overhaul right now in this window, what are the positions you think they need to sign in? And do you know if there are any deals that are on the move?
Hello there, Julian. And yes, we will try to get your favourite interview on The Big Interview. I think that's a difficult one because they are desperately, desperately short of money. They are extraordinarily keen to try and get either Manchester United or Inter Milan to sign Ivan Rakitic. And therefore, they are desperate for Ivan Rakitic to accept that his time at the Camp Nou is up, when right now they need him very, very badly. He would be playing very regularly, except for the fact that they view him as one of their most, in fact, their most saleable asset, by which I mean the asset that they're willing to trade, but which will yield them a big sum. So one, irrespective of which position you'd like to cover or which player you believe could be tempted, in all honesty, the money supply and the debt and the way in which they've constructed loans to add Griezmann onto the, you know, the payments that they still owe to Dortmund and to Liverpool for Dembele and Coutinho, and my, you know, previously mentioned point that they are, you know, they're scraping up funds in order to try and to be able to fund the renewal of senior players whose contracts need to be updated, including Messi, or they want to update Messi's. So I think it's been proven that they're short at right back, whether that's cover, whether that's a mixed picture, because Semedo has proved tremendously good at left back, far superior, in my humble opinion, to the player that he's shown himself to be at right back. It might be, this is my own take on it, not Barcelona's take, it might be that Semedo, by proving himself to be an adequate right back and an extraordinarily good left back, it might be that suddenly his asset value, the summer, not winter, has gone up, and if they could trade and find a replacement, that might be something they think they could do a shrewd deal on, get more money for Semedo than they spend on somebody that they think should come in. So, positionally, again, until we know about Araujo, although it seems that Valverde likes him, until we know more about Todibo, although it seems that Valverde doesn't like him, the mixture of those two plus the two Frenchmen and Piqué at the moment will get you through to summer, and I don't really expect a centre-half. I honestly think that while they can play Griezmann at nine, Julian, I honestly think that were they to add an out-and-out goal-getter, and they tried so hard for Carlos Vela last winter market, who then went on to have a record-breaking MLS season, looking slimmer and fitter and more, what I say it, more efficient than he did at Real Sociedad. That was Valverde's choice. The club turned him down. They had a try for Stuani. They had a try for umpteen players. And it's my opinion that given that the Barcelona have now become goal reliant rather than pass and position reliant, even though they've got Dembélé and Ansu and Carlos Perez and Messi and Suarez and Griezmann, an out-and-out nine who'll accept maybe only playing 10 or 15 times between January and May, but who'll do a Larsson for them, I think is where they could be tempted, and where crazy things have happened in football, where they might suddenly go from being, you know, fourth or fifth or sixth ranked team with a possibility of winning the Champions League to the dark horse that does win it, because you know, with extra goals and some tightening up in midfield so that the defence gets an easier job, because the defence is not as bad as people make out. It's the midfield where they need to sort things out. It, with that influx of Astuani or Avella, that, you know, their type, then, you know, who knows? And because that they, because I think that right now Barcelona have earned 56 million already from this season's Champions League. And should they go through as far as the quarterfinals, that'll be up to about 86. So that's before you even think about semifinals, finals, and the extra money that brings. They're on course, because they will qualify for the group, I think. They're on course for an 87 million euro Champions League season. So, you know, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul is possible at Christmas, Julian. And I honestly, given the superfluity of resources in other positions, a jack-in-the-box nine might be the thing.
Thanks, Julian. Thanks, everybody. Okay, it's time for a quick break. We'll be back in a little minute.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We're straight in with an audio question recorded from one of our socios, Tom Lee. Take it away, Tom.
Hi, Graham and the team. Tom Lee here with another audio question for the Socio Q&A. In his most recent ESPN verbal diary, if you like, Graham discusses the potential for Zidane to move upstairs as director of football, bringing in not one of the renowned hired guns, but somebody from the youth setup, a la Guardiola, into Barcelona 08, whether that's Xabi Alonso or Raul Gonzalez. I think it's interesting that he published that column pretty much simultaneously that Jose Mourinho, no less, was appointed Spurs boss. He also, in that same column, suggested that he has Real Madrid as slight favourites to win La Liga in May 2020. Does the appointment of Mourinho in Tottenham actually firm up that opinion, given that for the president at Real now withdraws and takes away one of his key temptations to jump ship and put Mourinho into the job, if indeed he's no longer available and clearly has had his card marked that the Real Madrid job wasn't available? So Zidane, therefore, to stay until at least the end of the season with that possible succession plan, does that, Graham, strengthen your opinion that this will be the year for Los Blancos in La Liga? Thanks.
For those who don't know Tom, follow him at Tom's Tips. I'm pretty sure, is that right, Mr. Lee? I think so. Tom often asks my advice, and I think through inaction, I saved him some money at the weekend when Getafe only managed to draw Espanyol. Yes, the lack of Mourinho clearly takes one option for Emperor Florentino away, and Florentino definitely had an itch that he wanted to scratch about the way in which Mourinho left the club and whether there was life in that old dog yet. I have no hard information, but I suspect that the speed with which Spurs suddenly moved on Mourinho, when if they wanted to get Pochettino and Mourinho in, they should have done so at the beginning of the international window. I suspect that Jose Mourinho or his agent, Jorge Mendes, will have said to Spurs, oh, we've got this big offer coming in from, and Daniel Levy believed them and moved, which is entirely legitimate on everybody's part. Did Jose Mourinho say, well, I've got a big offer? I don't know. About Real Madrid, I don't know. But I do know that I would, as Tom probably has, move beyond that, in that I hinted earlier in this chat that Madrid's fitness coach, Gregory Dupont, the Frenchman who worked at Lille successfully, worked with Didier Deschamps in winning the World Cup, has worked, if not wonders, has worked his magic with Real Madrid in terms of redesigning their daily fitness work, which is with the ball. Don't for a second think that there's, you know, massively extra running and that it's boot camp mentality like it is under Professor Ortega at Atleti. That wouldn't be true. But Real Madrid have been given a tiger in the tank right across the board, with minor exceptions, Isco being one. This is a squad which is now vastly mentally fresher, and that stems from being confident in that they can squeeze the best out of their own abilities because they're fit. Everybody knows in their own daily lives the difference you feel if you're sluggish and you've overeaten or underslept or had too many drinks, compared to when you've had a week or two, couple of sessions at a gym, decent sleep, you've been remorseless in managing your diet, and suddenly you're sharper, you're more alert, you feel more sure of your decision making. Well, footballers are the same, and Dupont has had that effect on Real Madrid, and he's Zidane's appointment. Zidane's lack of impact on the team when he took over in a horrible situation has metamorphosed into this daily working regime under Zidane, resembling the one that he established when he took over from Benitez, where elite players are not only enjoying themselves day by day, they're enjoying themselves without it being a comfort zone. The things that he's getting them to work on, which is speed of transition, speed of movement of the ball, shooting from distance, a degree of improved pressing, makes them serious rivals. I have them now as my favourites to win the title in Spain. And from having been nowhere in my ranking of who might win the Champions League, and I still think that, you know, they'd have a hard to against a full-strength City, and I think that they would suffer against a super-intense Liverpool. The end of season is far away, and it might be that City's injuries problems or this hubbub over how happy Pep Guardiola is or Liverpool's intensity potentially dipping by April, May, who knows? It might be that Real Madrid are in a firmer position still than they look like right now. And I think all of that must reflect on the way that Florentino Perez's decision-making goes. As a club, they're tight with Jorge Mendes, the vice president, José Ángel Sánchez, who I mentioned earlier on in the Pochettino discussion. He's very close to Mendes. As Tom says, that Mourinho thing is gone. And what's left, because there are not isn't a string of candidates standing there waiting with perfect CVs ready to take over at Real Madrid, not simply because of football qualities, but because it's an intensely political, sometimes poisonous club, not just demanding. And therefore, Pochettino is a possibility, particularly at the end of the season. And for those who didn't listen to the column or read it, Tom is referring to the fact that I think Madrid, at the time that Madrid were thinking about removing Zidane, at the time when it didn't look as if his work was bearing fruit, I was really urgently wishing not to lose Zidane, either from Spanish football or from Real Madrid. And I think that Real Madrid's order of how they sell, how they buy, which is still very necessary. The squad is bloated. The wage bill is bloated. There are several players there who aren't going to play. And therefore, you just need that term again of football husbandry. The best Madrid have been in recent seasons is when Zidane has either been formally director of football or acting in that role informally. And were Florentino Perez to remove this wonderful Frenchman from post, then to promote him to director of football and to bring in Raul Gonzalez Blanco, the all-time great striker at Real Madrid, or Xavi Alonso. Xavi Alonso is coach of the B-side at La Real, and Raul is coach of the B-side at Real Madrid, Castilla. And they are eminently positive candidates for taking over at Real Madrid in a field where you would compare them with Pochettino. But my bet right now is that if Zidane wants to stay, he'll now be given that option. I think that we've seen sufficient reawakening of important footballers at Real Madrid, and we've seen progress in other footballers sufficient that if Zidane's appetite to stay remains strong by the end of the season, I think and hope he'll be told, carry on, Jefe. But if that's not the case, one, I passionately believe that Zidane is a compendium of the talents and attitudes and knowledges that make him essential for Real Madrid going forward. He's so woven into their modern past, and he remains so vital, so useful, so energetic, in football terms, so young, that to lose him would be beyond idiotic. But if he doesn't stay on as coach, then there's a field. Suddenly there's a field with Raul and Xabi Alonso. Even though they are young, they would be the equivalent of appointing Guardiola in 2008 at Barcelona. And Pochettino is there too. So yes, Tom, the answer is hell's teeth, Zidane, to the end of the season. Damn sure, baby. And the trophy's coming. I think they're title winners here. And carry on. Carry on, Zizou, would be my hope.
One of my favourite movies in the series. Here's Shane Hurley with the next question. What La Liga club would be the best fit now for the available Robert Moreno? And what is the view of him now in Spain? Any personal dealings with him? And just for those who are unfamiliar, we're talking, of course, about the former youth coach and scout who Luis Enrique made assistant at Barcelona and Roma and Celta. And then later Spain, and he took charge of the Spanish national team during Luis Enrique's compassionate leave and has stepped down upon his return. So, Graham, what do we know about how Senor Moreno rolls, and where can you see him working next?
Hello, Mr. H. Let's take Shane's question in reverse, because the view of Moreno is that, given what Neil's listed there as Robert's CV, everybody needs to remember that he only had one senior role as head coach or manager. It was for a handful of games when, in the Malta away game, Luis Enrique had to rush home, and it transpired that his daughter was fatally unwell. So the depth of evidence on which to judge Robert Moreno is slim. But the almost unified position amongst the fans I've spoken to, amongst journalists I've spoken to, amongst the football industry that I've spoken to, and I have done, because I was at the majority of the games that Robert Moreno coached. I was there on, you know, a couple of Fridays ago when they beat Malta with one of the best performances I've seen from Spain since Xavi and Iniesta and Villa and Torres and Puyol were in the side. Irrespective of it being Malta, you look at what Spain did and you're like, yeah, this is massively healthy. They believe the alertness of mind, the quality of passing, the movement to facilitate the passing. And then the following Monday, when the dirty deed was done, when it was clear that there is an extraordinary amount of sympathy for Robert Moreno, the situation he's been left in. If it's transferable, what we saw Robert Moreno being able to do, which was transform a Spain side from, I thought, relatively moribund at a time when he and Luis Enrique were in charge, and to transform them from a side which started, you know, superbly in their Nations League games, and then go out by losing at home to England, and by being unable to deal with Croatia away, Moreno made a difference. The football improved. The players were absolutely dedicated to him. He brought in footballers we didn't expect to see in the squad, and they functioned. He challenged David De Gea. He brought in Gerard Moreno. He brought Albiol back, which I just could not believe, and clearly thought him a touchstone footballer at 34. There were changes all over the place. He gave real protagonism to Fabian. He dropped Koke. He made active decisions that, going back to your point, Shane, will have alerted certain club presidents to his abilities. And he will, I think, between now and June, be offered a job, whether that be help, help, save us, or as he used to say, help, help, here come the Bears. I did love the Hair Bear Bunch. But he'd be Mr. Peebly to a club at some stage coming in to be able to right the wrongs. Or if he's really wise, he'll wait until the spring when a club director of football comes to him and says, we want you to be in charge of, you know, name your team, Girona or Espanyol or maybe Betis, whoever it might be, Valencia, as of May, get ready. And I think that's what will happen. I think that he'll lick his wounds. I think that by June he'll be in a reasonably prominent Spanish football job. Speaks very good English. Made a point of displaying that. Not impossible that somebody in England might take a chance on him. But I think the likelihood is that he's managing a mid-level Spanish La Liga club by June.
Interesting that the last name mentioned there was Valencia, because our last question in today's show comes from Richard Cook, who's wanted to ask about Valencia and their Champions League route. Now, I'm going to remind the listeners that Graham and I are recording this 24 hours before Valencia played Chelsea, so this is a test of Graham's clairvoyant skills. With two rounds of games to go, kind of one now, do you think they will make it? It's been a group that has fascinated me with three strong teams. The Chelsea-Ajax game didn't disappoint. If Valencia don't make it, how will it impact on their budgetary point of view? You spoke about them having to qualify and sell a key part of their squad. They seem to be a club that really depends more than most on these things. So how, Graham, does Valencia's sort of medium-term financial plans depend on what happens across the next couple of match days?
Well, Ricardo, it does to a huge extent, but let's re-emphasise a point that I made, which is that the Champions League revenue this season is more extraordinary than it has ever been. Because of certain fixed payments, and it's, again, it's based on the coefficient and performance and market share, and I won't, you know, do the whole equation. But even though they are further down the rankings than Atleti, Barca and Real Madrid, Valencia have earned somewhere close to 46 million from the Champions League already this season. So that helps enormously, because although I haven't rehearsed this, their global debt, I think, is in the region of 500 million. And that means that with the... let's just see if I can give you... I think that it's just under 500 million with the new stadium having been restarted, next to paralysed at the moment. And there's long-term and short-term debt in there. So therefore, I think Richard was completely clear, but just for others who might not be, Valencia's need to sell, irrespective of performance, is based on their own financial plan. They have stated absolutely openly that they needed to qualify for 15 straight years for the Champions League to meet their own financial provisions, and sell at least one player that got them there every time they qualify for the Champions League. So that means that the emphasis on the director of football being able to, this was the phrase that Harry Redknapp got so furious about, wheel and deal, i.e. Buy short, sell long, in traders' terms, is huge. So, picking apart the points, Richard, number one, you know, this performance so far this season, which as we speak has them tied on 7 points with Chelsea and Ajax, as we speak with a head-to-head advantage on Chelsea, and with a final away day in Amsterdam against Ajax, Yeah, you're right that the qualification is in the balance, but it can remain so until, you know, day six. With two more wins, they'd earn 5.4 million euros with two more wins, less if it's a win and a draw. So that would take them above 50. And if they get into the last 16, should they qualify, then there's another nine-ish. And if they get to the quarterfinals, Valencia stand to earn by reaching the quarterfinals something like 77, 78 million euros, which is an extraordinary sum. That used to be the sum that a winner might get. Would they still, if they got to the quarterfinals and earned something just under 80 million, would they still be looking to sell a senior player? Richard, they would. Definitely they would. More, they would have sold Rodrigo out from underneath Marcelino in the summer had Atleti been able to get rid of Correa. My strong opinion is that Atleti will try to do that deal again at Christmas. I think it's a horrendously different prospect to sell your, what is at or around, including Parejo, your best player in mid-season and try to replace him. And Rodrigo is enormously important to Valencia. So we're talking about a juggling of clairvoyance that's far beyond simply do they get through, do they beat Chelsea this week as we're recording, and do they then go and get a decent result in Amsterdam? We're thinking about, you know, do they qualify for the Champions League next May if they sell Rodrigo? If they keep Rodrigo, are they scrapping their financial planning with 500 million euros of debt to service and Peter Lim saying, you know, I'm not paying any more of my money, that Valencia needs to wash its face, which is entirely legitimate, and a stadium which was unmothballed and then slightly mothballed again, and a squad whereby, you know, their wages are extremely high. They want to bring youth in. That was the reason that they disagreed so strongly with Paulo Longoria, their director of football, and with Marcelino, and got rid of them both, and their general manager, Matteo Alemán, who were three forces for absolute football good at Valencia. They disagreed because Marcelino wanted to keep senior players, sign better players, and win things. And Peter Lim is like, no, we perform robustly, we qualify for the Champions League, and then we sell assets and buy at a cheaper price again. It's a financial model which can work if you're in business, but in football, judging horse flesh and getting it right in terms of how brilliantly you trade, not simply to make a profit but to stay competitive, it's a bloody difficult art. Immensely difficult. So, Richard, the simplest way forward for Valencia is not only to get two brilliant results against Chelsea and Valencia and go through, and then hopefully keep going through, it's also an urgent need because it changes Peter Lim's verdict on who has to be sold and how many have to be sold. So, bargain hunters of the world, of the football world, start queuing up outside Paterna, Valencia's training ground, and Mestalla, their brilliant old stadium, because on balance, there are likely to be bargains to be bought. But if they... listen, Richard, I'm going to stick my neck out there. I think they're good enough to draw against Chelsea, maybe win, but I think it's a draw against Chelsea. They keep the head-to-head against Chelsea, having won at Stamford Bridge. At that point, they just need to match Chelsea's matchday six result, which is within their powers. Odds against Valencia qualifying, yes, but impossible, far, far, far from it, and very, very lucrative.
Okay, that's everything that we have time for in today's show. We'll be back tomorrow with, well, more questions on La Liga, a little bit of Wales, golf and Madrid in that order, and some English Premier League stuff as well. But for now, Graham Hunter, thank you very much.
Adios, thanks for being there, socios, and Neil White.